everybody from South Florida, how you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Wow, see everybody in Montana, New Hampshire, California, New York, Mass, Florida, all kinds of everywhere from the country. Oh, more Californias. Hey, everybody, Montana just kicked in. This is Brian, everybody. Welcome to the call.
Hey, Brian.
Texas, Utah, Massachusetts, Connecticut. Everybody, welcome. Thanks for coming.
All right, we're going to get started with this evening's call. Welcome, everyone, to today's E3 Firearms Association call. My name is Colleen, and I'm just going to go over a few things about the Q&A portion of the call, and then we'll get started with tonight's program. Right now, we're in lecture mode. That means that your lines are muted. When we go into the Q&A portion, we'll be opening your lines if you have a question to ask. If you email us your question in advance, we've got those, and we will be covering those with Adam. But if you'd like to ask a question at any point, whether we've reached the Q&A portion or not, just press *2 on your phone. When you do that, that will raise your hand and put you in the queue so that when we get to the Q&A portion, we'll see that your hand is raised. We'll open your line and announce the city and state that you're in, that your line has been opened, so that you can then ask your question. So again, that's just pressing *2 on your phone, and you can do that at any point during the call. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our co-founder, Brian Johnson, to get the call started.
All right. Thanks, Colleen. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the call. I'm so glad everybody can make it. And I'm excited about tonight's call. And, of course, we have our special guest president of E3 Firearms Association, Adam Pancho, and, you know, excited to hear about some current affair topics he's going to talk about first. So a little bit about the call. The format is Adam's going to spend about 10, 15 minutes going through some real current affair type stuff he wants to share with everybody. And then we're going to roll into the Q&As. We do have a whole bunch of questions that were sent in from a lot of you that Adam will hit. We'll stay on as long as we possibly can. But also, more importantly, you know, please go ahead, like Colleen said, you know, hit *2. Go ahead and get in the queue to ask any question. You know, the nice thing about this call is I'm watching all the folks pop in. We got Montana, California, Texas, you know, all over the country, Connecticut, New York, New Hampshire, lots of people in New Hampshire. So the nice thing is we looked at the list today of everybody joining the call, and there's everything from law enforcement to special forces all the way down to moms and newbies in this world. So this is a great call to have, and the, you know, just keep in mind that please ask questions because everybody else gets to hear the dialogue with you and Adam, and everybody can learn from your questions as well. So excited about that. A couple of housekeeping things. Everybody, just make sure you're on at the end of the call. We actually have some special gifts that we're going to be giving a few people here on the call. We have some partners, some joint venture partners that, you know, came to a CD3 and they want to share with you some of their stuff as well. So we got some really cool stuff at the end of the call that we're going to hand out to a few people that get chosen on the call here. So that's going to be fun. We have a couple of announcements we also want to make. So excited for the call. I just want to welcome everybody. You know, we have a really important mission here at E3 Firearms Association to really make a positive difference in people's lives, no matter where you are in your firearms world and community. So we're really excited about our community. We appreciate you being here. And I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to Adam. He's going to hit some current affairs. We'll go into questions, and then we're going to hand out some fun gifts towards the end of the call. So, Adam, thanks for being on, and I'm going to hand it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate everybody being out there throughout the U.S. and world tonight from up here in sunny New Hampshire. As you New Hampshire folks know, the winter hit us yesterday and got a little bit of snow, so it's a nice snowy atmosphere up in New Hampshire, which I actually like. So just want to touch on a few different things tonight. As Brian said, touch on current affairs here real quick, and then bounce around to a couple different topics before we open up to any questions that you have out there. I know you've got several, and I'm happy to talk about those and see what you got. You know, had a lot of questions, it feels like, in recent history. Over the past, you know, several weeks, obviously there's been some world news throughout the U.S. of shootings. In fact, you know, there's a fairly significant one today out in the West Coast in the California area, if you're staying tuned to the news today. And, you know, folks asking me, you know, how do I prepare for something like that, or how do I react if, you know, one of these type of situations happens? And, you know, it's, as you can imagine, a challenging question to answer. And I think the reality is we just need to be mentally prepared and physically prepared to deal with, you know, most anything that could occur. You know, in the case of how do I deal with a mass shooting? Well, that's a good question. You know, one, you need to have some training under your belt, obviously, and you need to be multidisciplined. You know, so a lot of folks think, well, I need to just focus on my firearms training. But, you know, that's not the case. Firearms is just part of a solution, possibly, to a problem. There's a lot of different skill sets that you really should have. So not just your firearm skills, your hard skills of, you know, understanding how to use, you know, your everyday concealed carry gun, things like that. But how about medical training? Are you trained on, you know, first aid buddy care type of training on saving your life if you get injured seriously, or maybe saving a family member or an innocent bystander that you have to save? Do you have that type of training? Do you have the equipment to do that? How about hand-to-hand type of things? Brian and I were talking earlier this evening before we got on the call, and our good friend John Fain, one of our instructors who, you know, specializes in unarmed defense primarily, you know, he always says, you know, the gun isn't always the answer. And in fact, the gun is rarely the answer, as we know, if we're using our head, that is. And so we need to have some training that we could deal with a situation with our hands sometimes. And I'm talking defensive tactics. I'm not talking martial arts. Martial arts are great, and they're great discipline, and there's a lot to be said for martial arts. I'm talking simple defensive tactics, so hand-to-hand tactics that you can use without any tools to fight an aggressor or an attacker, or maybe stop a violent situation from happening, something like that, where the firearm isn't always the answer or the correct choice, depending on the level of force you have out there. Other things to think about besides, like, firearm skills, hand-to-hand skills, and medical training is, how about driver training? You know, as a police officer, as you guys know, you know, just police officers, the most dangerous thing that we do is drive a car. And as human beings, you know, in this country, I would say probably the most dangerous thing that we do is operate a vehicle. You know, just think about the case of, you know, driving down a road at 55, 60, you know, miles an hour, you know, two-lane road, a head-on collision. I mean, that is instant incapacitation right there at those speeds. So that is one of the most dangerous things we do. So ask yourself, have you ever received driver's training? And I'm not talking about when you were, you know, 16 years old, you know, in high school, driver's ed. I'm talking about actual hands-on driver's training, you know, defensive, offensive type of driving, you know, maneuvers that you could do to get yourself out of situations, or just good, safe driving techniques. I've been through a lot of driver and instructor schools and taught offensive and tactical driving for some agencies back in the day, and I really took a lot out of that. And every day I utilize those skills, in fact, more than any other skill probably that I've learned throughout my life. For hard skills, driving is one of those things we pretty much do every single day. And, you know, you need to be prepared out there on the street. You need to drive appropriately, meaning your hands on the wheel, your head's up on a swivel, you're not down looking at your phone. Those are the given things. But, you know, how do you react if you have to stop instantly? You know, are you just you know, locking up those brakes and slamming in the back of somebody? Or do you have the skills to, you know, evasively drive around something? Do you know how to take a corner hard and fast? Things like that. But I would encourage you to maybe look into attending a professional driver's school. There's a lot of great ones out there that offer, you know, 2-3 day type of programs. I will warn you right up front that driver's training, that type of training, is not cheap whatsoever. You're definitely going to pay some money for it. But I'll tell you what, it is well worth it. Like I said, it's one of those things that, you know, I found extremely valuable in my career. You know, everything from doing executive protection type of driving and relating those skills just to my everyday driving habits, especially when, you know, as most of you know, I've got some kids, you know, so when I got my kids in the back seat, you know, strapped in the car seats, you know, I'm out there, you know, that's a defensive posture. You're trying to keep the little ones safe, and you need to understand what you're doing on the road. And there's a little bit more to it than what you learned in driver's ed. So some good, solid, practical defensive driving or tactical driving type of training would do you good. So that's something just to think about out there. Along with driving, something I want to talk about is maintaining a low profile and a level head. You know, I tell you what, if you're one of those folks and you use that thing in the middle of your steering wheel, I think it's referred to as the horn, and you lay on that thing on a regular basis, I would encourage you to maybe lay off that thing just a little bit. You know, if you're an aggressive driver, meaning you're one of those folks that, you know, if somebody's going slow in front of you, you're just right up on their butt, you know, tailgating them and, you know, cursing them and, you know, showing them that, you know, they're number one with that middle finger of yours and things like that, I would encourage you to maybe lay off a little bit and relax out there on the road. You know, we understand, you know, sometimes we're in a hurry to get, you know, from point A to point B. But, you know, that aggressive driving behavior is going to tend to escalate things. And one, it's going to throw your blood pressure through the roof. But two, you know, you're wasting energy. So, you know, when you're out there driving around, you know, take a calm, level-headed approach to it and avoid that horn, avoid the middle finger, you know, avoid driving aggressively so you're up on people and, you know, at speeds, passing people on, you know, not safely, things like that. I would just encourage you to, you know, be cautious out there. Just something to think about. And something that kind of goes along with maintaining a low profile and a level-headed nature out there on the road is think about what you present out there on the road. You know, I've talked about before in articles and, you know, things like that with folks, you know, maintaining a low profile. If I'm driving down the street and I pass somebody, do they know after I pass them that, you know, I'm a retired Air Force guy, I'm a life member of the NRA, driver only carries $50 worth of ammunition, and, you know, all these other things. I'm, you know, so maybe maintaining a low profile, you know, bumper stickers and stickers on, you know, back of your car and stuff like that. You know, there's some funny ones out there, and, you know, and I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just, you know, maybe attracting attention to yourself that may not be welcome. So just some things to think about there. I don't want to discourage you from doing that, especially if you're proud of things you've done and things like that. But, you know, a low profile is a good way to roll, especially if you carry a firearm. So whether you carry one professionally or everyday carry, a low profile is very important, at least in my opinion. One last thing I want to kind of close on topics is security, meaning home security. You know, we're kind of getting into the season where home burglaries, break-ins, things like that, or, you know, get fairly aggressive out there, especially coming up around the holidays where, you know, you got high dollar items stacking up in your house for gifts and things like that, or, you know, you're leaving to go shopping and you're going away on trips with family and things like that. Think about the posture of your house. You know, if I want you to think about it right now, all you guys are out there on the call, ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you were to go out front on the road that you live on, and you walk up the street, think from a burglar perspective, a bad guy, a thief perspective. As you walk up and down your street and you look at the homes on your street, I want you to think to yourself, which home would be the easiest to break into? Meaning, you know, is your house dimly lit? Do you have motion lights? Is it well lit? Do you have maybe signage indicating that you've got a security system? You know, do you have overgrown bushes in front of windows, you know, like hiding spots, things like that? Do you have vehicles that are unlocked in your, right now? Do you have a vehicle unlocked in your driveway? Do you have a vehicle unlocked in your garage? What's in that vehicle that's unlocked in your garage? Anything valuable? Something to think about. You know, easy targets. If you were to walk around every window in your house, are all the windows locked? You know, so things to think about. You have an alarm. Do you actually set your alarm when you leave the house? Things like that. Do you have a camera system? Are you actively monitoring your camera system? So just some little things to think about. I know it's, you know, if you're on this call, you're probably a security conscious person, but I just want to revitalize that a little bit because we do tend to get complacent, and we are certainly coming to the season where those burglaries and things like that are a little bit more common. So, you know, just be cautious out there. Make sure your home is a hard target, not only when you're gone, but when you are home, you know. So things to think about right there. So there's a few topics out there. Just wanted to get some of that out there. I know we did get some questions that got sent in that I want to get to and answer, and I'm hoping some of you out there have some questions for me and get some good dialogue going out there. So I think Colleen, where are we going from here?
Yeah, so Adam, and I appreciate what you just said. You know, it's I've had way too many questions, and this is a good topic you said about like laying off the horn, or you know, what you say, what you do, and now that you're carrying. And the reason I say it's a good topic for today is because we know there's a lot of new folks on the call that have started carrying recently. And, you know, it's a topic I have a conversation a lot about, but people don't understand why that's so important. You know, just in my kids, as they started to get fluent in being carrying, you know, if at one point you would be a hothead in a restaurant or a movie theater or whatever it is, for whatever reason, now you have to lay off that. And one of the biggest reasons, Adam, is, you know, if you get into, unfortunately, you get into some incident where you actually had to use your firearm and you actually started an instigated situation, like turning around to somebody in a movie theater and saying, hey, be quiet, or telling somebody something in a restaurant, and then that escalated into an incident that you unfortunately had to use your firearm, it's a really good chance that the DA or somebody is going to come after you now and say, well, you're the one that actually started this, even though that your life might have been threatened and you had to use your firearm. It's a good chance, even if you were in the right, they might come after you because of that specific reason. So that's a really good reason, like you said, Adam. I want to get your thoughts on that, of one good reason why, if you're not carrying, you might want to maintain a low profile and keep your mouth shut in some scenarios, you know?
I'll tell you what, you hit the nail on the head, Brian. It's the three-letter word, ego. You know, I think that ego gets folks into trouble. You know, if you don't have an ego, raise your hand out there, right? You know, so we all have an ego, and we all have pride, and, you just got to be a little bit more cautious out there, especially if you do have a firearm on you, because, you know, exactly, Brian, as you said, you may be in a situation where you actually started the situation, and you certainly don't want that. So check your egos at the door, understand that, you know, some people out there are just going to be disrespectful, and, you just need to understand it and let it bounce off your shoulders, because, you know, there's no place for a heavy-handed ego out there that's going to get you in trouble because, you know, you're trying to make a point or get somebody to be quiet or whatever. It's just not worth it, especially with your family with you.
Yep. So everybody hit *2 if you want to get in the queue to ask any questions of Adam, and it's anything from training to education to legal. You guys all know that Adam, of course, is an active police officer and SWAT operator and all of the above. So get in the queue. And then he also has some questions in front of him. So any questions that you want to ask Adam and Colleen, we're going to go ahead and hand it to you to run this.
Okay, we're going to start with one of our online callers, and then we'll alternate between callers and questions that have been sent in. So our first caller here, actually, I do not see the city and state that you're calling from. So if your hand is raised, and go ahead, and we just open up the line.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hello. I'm online.
Yeah, what you got?
Wow. Well, I just wanted to thank Adam for posting his YouTube video about traffic stops. I don't have a weapon and I don't have a gun license, but I still did everything wrong. So it's good to know, good information.
Well, thank you very much. What's your name?
My name is Adana.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that comment. Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, we just don't necessarily think about, and it's certainly worth giving it some thought, you know, especially if you tend to be a little bit heavy on the foot, you know, when you're driving around. So it's definitely something to, you know, kind of get your gears spinning about, you know, what you're going to do if you are pulled over in a traffic stop type of situation and what to do, you know, especially obviously if you have a firearm with you. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I also just wanted to congratulate you on this new venture and wish you good luck with it too.
Oh, thank you very much. We're very excited, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now we're going to go to one of our questions that came in over email. This is from Joe from Newburyport. What percentage of time are handgun sights actually used in self-defense situations? Is it more practical to focus on training time on point versus aim?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, an age-old question there. Do I focus on point type of shooting or well-aimed shooting? And the answer is both. A lot of folks, ask that question, and it's a common topic, and especially in defensive handgun type of training. Do I put more emphasis on like a point shooting type of thing, or actually using my sights? And as far as the actual answer to that question, what percentage are sights used versus unsighted shooting? I don't know. That's a good question, and I'm not sure there's something out there that we can turn to actually give us that statistic. I don't think that's something that's really readily available out there. But what I will tell you is you need to understand how to accurately shoot your firearm first. I think that's crucially important, how to make a precision shot. So if you needed to call a shot and hit a specific point on a target at a given distance, do you even have the ability to do it? And do you understand what that entails to be able to do that as far as moving your trigger and lining up your sights correctly? If you understand that and you can do that, then that will translate into, quote, point type of shooting. And, even point shooting is aimed shooting. So even though you're not necessarily using your sights, meaning if we're talking a traditional handgun, I'm not necessarily centering up my front sight, my rear sight notch, even amount of daylight, even across the top, putting the dot where I want a shot to go, all that good stuff. Even if you're not doing that, the reality is you probably have extended your firearm, your handgun, at full extension, and you're pointing it, thus you're aiming it. All right, and you're looking through your gun, and I say that because your gun is actually in front of you, so you're probably looking through it and past it, meaning, so you're pointing, and all of us have, a lot of us have done that exercise where you're just looking at something, and you extend your index finger out, and you point at something. Well, if there's a laser extending from the end of your finger, you'd probably be pointing literally at whatever it is you're looking at. So point type of shooting is actually aimed shooting. So whether you're using a hard sight focus, a soft sight focus, meaning the sights are there, I kind of got my front sight where it needs to be, or I'm literally 100% target focused and my sights are my peripheral vision back here towards my eyes, and I'm not necessarily lining them up, you obviously need some type of aiming reference, So other than like the hip shot, we're so close, we're in contact distance to the target where our gun isn't even extended out. We're kind of shooting from the hip, so to speak, in a close quarter situation. With the exception of that, all right, we need some type of aimed shooting, all right, to guarantee the hit. And that's a key word I want you to focus in on, guarantee the hit. If you can't guarantee a hit, then you absolutely should not be pulling the trigger, especially if we've got the fear of innocent bystanders in and around whatever threat it is that we're trying to deal with. Kind of a long-winded answer on that. I don't know what the actual statistic is, how often are sights actually used versus whether it's, kind of not used and it's, point type of shooting. That's a good question. I'm not sure. But what I do know is if you don't understand how to and you don't have the skills to make a precision shot on call, if you don't have those skills, you're going to struggle to make a point shot. The two go hand in hand. And you also got to, keep in mind that situations vary. If you have a situation where there's a lot of people around, that's a precision shot. If you don't have some type of aim sight reference, or at least peripherally the gun lined up in your sight so you can guarantee where your hit's going, then you're simply being irresponsible. So it kind of goes back to cross training, what we were talking about earlier. It's very important to practice the skill of, very quick reactionary, reflexive type of shooting, just extending the gun out real quick and getting on the trigger and getting some reasonable accurate hits on target, and understanding how to use my sights and engaging a precision shot and a balance between the two. So I hope that made sense.
All right, great. We're going to go back out to another live question, but first I wanted to mention I do see some folks that have joined us They're listening over the internet as opposed to a phone connection. So you can also ask a question if you're listening over the internet. In order to do that, there should be a set of controls across the bottom of your screen, and one of those is a hand. You can just use that to raise your hand. Of course, if you've joined us by phone, again, it's *2 to get in the queue. And right now we're going to go out to another anonymous caller. So I don't know your city and state, but your line is now open.
Hello, anonymous caller.
Can you hear us?
Hey, we got a caller out there?
Okay, well, I'm going to go to one of the other write-in questions. And if you still have a question out there, we may have already answered it. If you still have a question, just press *2 to raise your hand again, and we'll come right back to you after this write-in question. So this question comes from Ken in West Palm Beach. And Ken writes, when I'm driving around doing my regular routine, part of my day is getting in a few hours at the beach. Since I can't bring my firearm on the beach, as I leave my chair and walk a few miles, I keep it in my car. Whether it is inside my car or in the trunk, it can get pretty hot, especially in the summer. Is it safe to keep a firearm in a car where the temperatures could get extremely hot?
Yeah, good question. Well, one, I guess, is why aren't you carrying your gun on your beach, on the beach? Obviously, I think if you're talking, you got flip-flops on, some shorts and no shirt, obviously that's going to be quite challenging. So I guess I appreciate that one right there. So to answer your question, is there a fear of, bullets going off because of the temperatures in your car? I would say highly, highly unlikely. I mean, if it's 70 degrees out, that, temperatures inside your car could be, like as much as 100 degrees or so. If it's 100 degrees out, temperatures could be, I've seen, measurements, coming up in the 170 degree range. But let's call it 200 to be safe. So at 200 degrees, your bullet's not going to go off. It's not going to, quote, cook off. And that's the term that we'll use typically in the firearms world, especially in the military world, is a cook off, a round that just launches based on the heat. Where we typically see a cook off is in, like machine guns where they're heavily fired and you have a round in the chamber after you stop firing and it just cooks off because the barrel in the chamber is just so hot. But, for your vehicle to get that hot where that happens is highly unlikely. And in fact, if it does get that hot, your car is most likely on fire at that point. So it's probably irrelevant. But good question. I wouldn't have much concern, if any, leaving rounds in the car in hot weather. I don't think that would be an issue. And obviously, hey, if you got a shirt on, then maybe consider a belly band or something like that where you can actually take the gun with you on a beach. So hopefully that answered your question and helped out. What else we got?
Hey, Adam, it's
okay.
Brian. We had somebody put a question in on your YouTube video for tactical reloads, and this just came in recently. And the question basically says, how practical is it for everyday concealed carry people to understand tactical reloads versus law enforcement or police officers?
Well, it's a good question, Brian. I think the heavy emphasis should be on an emergency reload. If we're talking a pistol, a handgun for an everyday carry, obviously it's good to understand both and understand how to do an emergency reload versus tactical reload. And for you, those folks who may not understand what we're talking about, do I reload my gun before it runs out of ammunition or do I reload my gun when it runs out of ammunition? And both are important skills to know how to do. I'd say if you could only devote so much time to focus on one, I'd focus the energy on how to reload my gun in an emergency reload situation, meaning my gun has run dry, the slide is locked to the rear on an empty magazine. How do I go through that reload process? Obviously, that's the most important one. But a tactical reload is definitely a skill that I encourage you to understand how to do and think about when you may do something like that. And like I said, in most circumstances, if we find ourselves in an altercation, it's not something we're necessarily immediately thinking about. We're thinking about stopping the illegal aggressive activity, stopping the threat with our firearm. We're moving that trigger blade. We're shooting as much as we need to until we get the desired result, which is to stop that illegal aggressive activity. And in some cases, by the time that happens, you may have run out of ammunition, or you may even have to reload to continue to attempt to stop the situation. So emergency reload is really the priority, but a tactical reload, also referred to as a magazine exchange, taking out one magazine, putting in another before you actually run out of ammunition, is a good skill to learn how to do. So I practice both. And, you know, another way to look at it is, do you want to put your gun back in the holster and it's not fully loaded to go? So maybe you do get in some type of situation and, you know, help or backup is not immediately available or on the way or already on scene. Are you going to go back to the holster? Are you going to secure your firearm or are you going to hold and stand by with your gun, not at maximum capacity? So it's definitely important to know both. I would definitely put a little bit more emphasis on the emergency reload, meaning the I'm out of ammunition reload. There's a little bit more, you know, urgency on that one. But that's a good question.
Okay, back to you, Colleen.
Okay, for our next call, we are going out to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Jason, go ahead.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Adam, nice to hear you again. I actually met you doing a ride along with another officer up there in your place of business.
Awesome. Good to talk to you.
Couple months ago. So my question here in New Hampshire is, if you are concealed carrying and somebody in the place of, like, you go into like a grocery store and they notice it, like some, like an employee or something, and says, what are the rules about somebody saying, you know, you can't, we don't want you to carry in here, or you know, leave the premise or something like that?
Jason, you're talking about maybe a business that doesn't allow it? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and how would you even know that they don't allow it?
Yeah, that's a good one. Most places I've seen, at least around here in New Hampshire and throughout the country, really, if they don't want firearms carried in the facility or their place of business, they'll typically have something on the front door, you know, like a gun with a circle and an X through it, something to that effect. You know, and me and Brian have had this conversation before, and I think I've spoken of it before, of, you know, policy versus law. So let's take an establishment here in the great state of New Hampshire that, you know, maybe has that sign on the door. Well, I know in the state of New Hampshire, as long as it's not a prohibited place, meaning a place that you legally cannot carry concealed, like maybe a federal building or a courthouse or something like that, if it's not one of those rare exceptions, or an airport would be another one, if it's just a business, you know, that's not a law. So that sign on the door is the store policy. They don't want that in their stores, and, you know, that's their right. But when you think about walking through that place of business, you have a choice. You can say, well, one, I'm not going to go in this business because, you know, they don't respect my right to, you know, protect myself in their place of business. You could make that decision. Two, you could choose to leave your firearm in the car and go into that place of business. Or three, you could simply have your gun concealed and go into that place of business, conduct your business, and leave. And I'm assuming that your gun wouldn't be brandished just randomly inside that place of business. So what would you be violating in that case? Well, you're violating a store policy, and that's not a law. It's a store policy. So am I making sense, Jason, there? Is that kind of the where you're going with that?
Yeah. If they asked you to leave, would you have to leave?
Well, yeah. I mean, especially if it's private property, they ask you to leave, then one, you should leave because you certainly don't want to cause a scene. And I certainly want you to make the argument for the great Second Amendment right there in front of everybody in the store and cause a scene and maybe make a bad situation worse. So I definitely would not encourage that. And, you know, two, they have that right, you know. So if it's a private property type of establishment, it's their business, and they want to trespass you from that location, meaning they want to ask you to leave, they don't want you in there, then they do have that right, and, you know, you should leave. But I'll tell you what, Jason, if you're carrying concealed responsibly, meaning your gun is actually concealed, the chances of anybody seeing it are so extremely rare. You know, and that's really the big one. I'd say the biggest learning point out of this conversation, Jason, is should be you know, when we carry our gun concealed, it is actually concealed. You know, it's not just we're throwing a T-shirt over a gun, you know, in a hip holster, and it's a full-size hand cannon, and you can see, you know, Smith & Wesson through your T-shirt because, you know, it's sticking out and printing so much. So you got to be responsible with your carry, and, you know, you need to make, you know, good decisions out there.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jason.
Okay, we had a caller a little while ago we tried to go out to and couldn't quite hear them. So I'm going to open that line again, and hopefully we can hear you right now. Go ahead.
Hey, I think we got you. Are you out there?
Hello.
Hey, I hear you loud and clear. Where are you coming from and what you got for a question?
Hey, so I'm actually calling from Canada.
Cool.
Yeah, my question is this. I work at a police academy. I've done numerous courses at SIG, master's, a bunch of courses. Come back here, and we're responsible for essentially several provinces. I've just come into kind of an issue where certain departments are saying they don't need recertification for their instructors. So We certify them initially and run recerts every 3 to 5 years, depending on the course. So my question is, what's the liability? You know, where should we have – in Canada, we have no national standard whatsoever in firearms training. So,
yeah.
You know, what? How do I approach this? And the reason is that things, you know, things obviously change. Every time I come down to the U.S. for training, come back, I take a ton of new stuff. I got to pass that stuff on. And I do it in a blog and a website, but, you know, there's only so much you can do in that medium without actually having people on a line and running a gun, if you will.
Yeah. Well, good question, and I feel your pain on that. And even down here in the States is no different than Canada. From agency to agency and state to state, we really, throughout the country in the U.S. here, we certainly see, you know, a variation of recertifications for police firearms instructors, whether it's, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. I'd say the norm I typically see out there is a 3-year certification. And, well, first off, let's talk about the importance of that. Why recertify? Well, I think you just kind of alluded to it. You know, you said, you know, when you come down here to the States, you take courses, you learn a bunch of new information and you bring it back. And that's what recertification is all about. So let's say, you know, you went through the police academy, you had a little time on the job, and then you went through a firearms instructor school. You know, that's your initial one right there. And you have a 50-man agency, so you got 50 members in your agency, and once a year you're qualifying those police officers, and maybe once a year in between that you're doing some type of skill builder or tactical shooter, something like that. Well, that's not a lot. I mean, so you're not getting to exercise your skills as a police firearm instructor really quite that often. As I know, most law enforcement firearm instructors, it's an additional duty. So your full-time job is you're a patrolman or you're a detective or, you know, or administrator or something like that. Your full-time job is not to be a firearm instructor. You know, there are certainly agencies out there that are larger and they do have full-time, you know, firearms training units and full-time firearm staff and things like that. But it's not exactly the norm up in Canada, nor is it here in the United States. So recertification is definitely important. I think 3 years is a pretty good window. And it's not necessarily that so many things are changing. It's more for the instructor to stay on his or her game. Because we get, you know, complacent in our own skills, pushing our own limits, keeping up on our own skills, and learning new techniques and finding better ways to teach and educate and, make people better shooters. Or, more importantly, for the police fire instructor, what I see is we're fixing problem shooters. One of the biggest challenges I think that police fire instructors deal with is those few people in their agencies who struggle to qualify. That's where police firearms instructors really earn their money. And how do you fix those people, get them qualified, and do it in a short amount of time? So doing a recertification course every 3 years or so, you're learning new skills, you're keeping your skills up to date, and you're maintaining that relevance. So it's definitely important, but I do feel your pain up there, partner. And, you know, some agencies may not be hip to that, meaning, you know, they're kind of dismissing that recertification. And, you know, you mentioned the L word, the liability word. I do think there is a liability. you know, in not maintaining that type of certification. You know, it's definitely a perishable skill. I mean, think about it this way, you know, they have to qualify every year. The police officers have to qualify every year or twice a year, whatever their standard is, you know, so why would you not have to make sure that firearms instructors do some type of recertification, even if it's a minimal one-day course, you know, every few years. Like down here in New Hampshire, you know, for law enforcement firearms instructors, it's every third year you got to go through a one-day recertification course at the New Hampshire Police Academy. It's usually a great day. You know, one, you're seeing some friends in other agencies, and two, you know, you're kind of getting up on some other techniques to do things, and you're pushing yourself a little bit, and it kind of revitalizes you a little bit. So is that where you're going with that? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one other quick thing. Will you be offering instructor level courses?
We may. You know, Brian and I have talked about it, and we are right now, sky's the limit, to be honest with you. You know, out on our website, we've got an agency page up there, and there's a form you can fill out to request training. And, you know, obviously, you know, you folks who know me out there know that I've got a passion for doing instructor-level courses, and our instructor staff, the instructors that we work with, are obviously highly trained in conducting pistol, rifle, shotgun instructor-level qualification courses. So it's certainly something we could do if requested. So absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Stay safe up there and warm.
Thanks, you too.
Hey, and Colleen, before you go to the next question and the written question, I just want to let everybody know the names are in for the gifts at the end of the call. So, Colleen, I'll make sure everybody stays on at the end, and we'll get those out. So I guess it's star two if you want to get in the queue, and I know that Colleen has some written ones as well.
Okay, so the next written question actually ties nicely to that last question because it's on the topic of training and courses. This comes in from Troy in Baton Rouge, and he says he's been training diligently for the past 4 years and blessed to learn from some great instructors. He goes on to say that he took a multi-day class for civilians that he really found to be good and would like to know, since it's difficult to find trainings like this, what do you foresee for offerings of specialty classes in the future? And so, Adam, that question, Brian, you may want to jump in on that as well.
I think that question was coming in, and I think I read that question as well, Colleen. It was that individual had taken a Mike Pannone course. Those of you who know Mike Pannone, what a phenomenal instructor. I've worked with Mike when I was at the SIG Academy. We hosted Mike in on a regular basis and just really teaches an awesome course out there. And I know it is challenging out there to find advanced level courses that are multi-day, meaning 2, 3, 4, 5 day classes that are geared towards the responsible citizen on an array of topics, rifle, pistol, shotgun, defensive tactics, and hand-to-hand, things like that. But there's several out there, and not to say that us here at E3 Firearm Association don't have that ability to do those. And as you understand, we have only just begun here at E3 Firearm Association. And stay tuned is what I can encourage you to see what we're going to have out there. Brian, anything you want to add to that?
I guess so. And, you know, that's something we're going to talk about towards the end of the call, but that's something we're real excited about. You know, the training, what we're doing here at E3, the nice thing about E3 is we know where everybody's levels are, what their interests are, what their needs are, and that's what's very unique about E3 Firearms Association. So even though you're all on this call here today, we actually are doing very specific training live, online, and calls and events specific to the level you're at. So if you are an operator or if you are law enforcement, there is going to be actual content specific to you versus, you know, if you're a mom or you're somebody new that's carrying, there's going to be classes and content specific to you. I mean, just today, got off the phone with instructor John Fain, who we just finished all of the course that he did is specific to police officers and law enforcement agencies. And the nice thing is we were actually also able to extract things that are very effective for civilians and things as well. So at E3 Firearms Association, not only do we have that law enforcement training stuff that you're going to see in the membership, depending on what level you're at, advanced, but then we're also able to repurpose some of that content to civilians. And we actually already have, and we don't want to spill the beans too much, Adam, but we actually already have some major events scheduled for 2018 where it will be that level of on-site, live, person-to-person type of interaction and training. So that stuff is coming up. So I just wanted to throw that in there. So, and if not,
and the courses that we are going to be offering that you're going to see if you're a member and you join up, there's some incredible courses. You know, I've really put a lot of heart and soul and time and energy and myself and the other instructors that we're working with to develop these comprehensive courses. And I know, nothing replaces actual hands-on training, but I'll tell you what, you can get, I'd say probably 80%+ of the way there by taking these. And then on your own, you could probably finish up most of the 20% by going out and practicing it safely at your range or dry fire or whatever the skills are at your local range. So, you know, a lot of this learning, these courses can actually take place web-based. You'd be surprised. And I'm excited for you to see these courses, and I think you're going to get a lot out of them.
Okay. Thanks, Adam. So I know that we're running out of time, and Colleen, can I hijack the call so we can close it up, or do you want to go to more questions? Do you have time or more? Colleen? Must be on mute.
Yes, I was
well,
on mute. I'll let you go ahead.
All right, cool. So I do want to give away some great stuff here, but I do want to actually, I'm glad that question came up, and Adam, I appreciate you talking about that. I mean, what we are doing, and we need your help, what we are doing here at E3 Firearms Association is very unique. It's very special. You know, the courses that we're putting out are not what you typically see out there. They're certainly not a bunch of YouTube videos or anything like that. I mean, we actually have PhDs in e-learning sciences. We have professors, and then, of course, we combine that with Adam's talents and history and skills to put out some really incredible courses. These are courses and inside courses. There's multiple lessons, and inside lessons there's other content. So, you know, we're really doing everything we can and putting a lot of time, energy, horsepower, money, and everything into really making sure that all of our members get, you know, outstanding results in what we're putting out there. And I can tell you right now, like some of the partners that I'm about to talk about that, you know, shared some stuff with us that we give out to you guys tonight, they're just extremely impressed with what we're doing. And these are, you know, very respected partners in the industry. So, you know, we're looking forward to it. We launched January 17th. I do want to ask everybody, you know, if you enjoy everything you're seeing already, if you like these calls, you know, these weekly calls, and, you know, we have live streaming TV shows coming up, you know, that's coming up real soon. You know, all the courses we talked about, we have webinars, we have events coming up, all the podcasts that are in the system. There's so much in the membership. We launched January 17th. We just want to ask everybody, please share E3 Firearms Association with all your friends, whether it's Facebook, send an email to them and tell them to go to our site and get on this list, because everybody that's on our list before we launch are going to have the opportunity to be founder members in the company, which means they're going to get some very special discounts. They're going to get some very special treatment and things just being founders, but they have to be on our list now before we launch, and then they'll have that opportunity, about a 72-hour opportunity to be able to be a founder. So please, we ask you to share it with 5, 10, 15, 20 people if you can. So we would appreciate that. And, you know, and hopefully you're going to really enjoy the stuff we're putting out there. So we have the names in. I just want to tell you a couple of announcements. One is all of the members, the executive team, Adam, we on the board of E3 Firearms Association, we have chosen a foundation that we will be supporting through profits of E3 Firearms Association. So a part of the proceeds for the company will be going to an organization called HAVA. And I'd love for Adam to talk about it for a minute, but we just want to share with you guys, you know, this is part of us giving back, and everybody that's members, you know, part of what you're doing is going to go towards this organization and helping them out. So I wanted to first just throw that out there, Adam, and I know you're a fan of this organization as well.
Yeah, sure am. HAVA is a great organization. What that stands for is Honored American Veterans Afield. So, you know, this is a great organization that's doing, one, raising money to help help our severely wounded soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines who come back from conflict and, you know, have to cope with life in general and just, you know, struggle to get through the day, whether it's, you know, PTSD type of injury or a physical injury or, you know, amputation or something like that. And HAVA just does great, great things. One of the things that they do that I absolutely love and a couple of my very good friends are involved in is the Learn to Shoot Again program. It's basically, you know, taking these heroes who've come back and, you know, they've got a lot of things that they're dealing with, you know, physical limitations now. And, you know, they're getting back on the gun. They're learning how to shoot again. They're getting the gun back in their hands for the first time in a while and just, you know, appreciating the fun it is to get out there and shoot and the discipline behind it. And it, you know, gives a sense of accomplishment, you know, getting back on the gun, getting some good accurate hits on target and things like that. And that's a great program that HAVA is doing, Learn to Shoot Again, or Learn to Shoot Again, that is, and just an awesome organization. So we're very proud to be supporting HAVA and the good folks at HAVA, just a great organization and an incredible cause.
Great, great. So everybody appreciate that part. And, you know, we're going to I just want to mention something out about a couple partners. But if you, first of all, everybody that's listening, if you're Jason from Florida, pay attention. I'm going to unmute your line in a minute because you are one of the winners for the call today. And the other winner that was given to me is John. And John, I think, is from Montana. So stay right there. I'm going to unmute your line in a sec just to make sure you guys are there so we get you this. But we got off the phone today with another partner, and we're real excited about, because part of what E3 is also about is trying to find the best of the best, the most outstanding opportunities and outstanding products that we can share with you guys. You know, our friends at White Birch Armory, we talked to Sean today, and Sean's going to be putting together a package for all of our members. And even before we launch, you're going to get an opportunity from an ammo standpoint, just an incredible, the absolute best price you could ever see on ammo, flat fee, all the ammo you want to buy, flat fee shipping. And we're just really grateful for them. They're a great partner that's come up, that's really stepped up, that wants to help and be part of, you know, our mission here at E3 Firearms and really contribute to our members as well. So happy about that.
Brian,
I think you were saying something there, Adam.
Let me jump in on that. I'll tell you what, White Birch Armory here in Rochester, New Hampshire, yeah, it is a shop here in Rochester, but, you know, they're going to hook you up wherever you are here in the United States. You need some ammo or whatever, they're going to a great resource for you to get what you want for firearms. I know they're an FN premier dealer as well as SIG, so you can get your SIG and FN needs and ammo. Boy, whatever you need for ammo, they're a great, great source. And Sean Manning, who is owner-operator of White Birch Armory, is a former Marine, sniper, Purple Heart recipient, and just an all-around great guy. You know, White Birch is who supplies me with all my guns and ammo. So we're proud to have White Birch on our team.
Yep, definitely. So Jason from Tampa, you're our first, getting the first gift. I'm going to unmute your line. I just want to make sure you're there. Just say hi so I can make sure we're getting this to you. You there, Jason?
Yeah, how's it going?
Hey, Jason, thanks for being on the call. So, hey, I just want to let you know our friends at ANR Design Kydex Holsters, you know, they're going to hook you up with a holster package and stuff. And just send we know who you are. We got you in our system. We're going to send you an email. We'll connect with you. And if you guys haven't seen any of their holsters, you should definitely check it out. It's A Alpha November Romeo Design. It's ANRDesignHolsters.com. Just go ahead and Google them. You got to check this stuff out. I tell you, they're one of the first companies I've seen from a Kydex holster. They have a one-piece Kydex holster, so it doesn't have all the screws going through it. They kind of mold it around a special way. It's the only one I ever seen. But this is another group that's been stepping up to the plate for us and really wants to be part of you know, adding some value to our membership. So, Jason, just we're going to connect you up, and they're going to take care of you, and appreciate you being on the call. And I think you're in Tampa, Florida, right?
My number is. I'm actually in New Jersey, but it's a Tampa number.
Oh, Okay.
Any
questions
big difference
for Adam
there.
Before we meet you? Yeah, exactly. Any questions for us, Jason?
No, I appreciate the time. It was very informative. Thanks, Adam. Thanks again.
Yeah, anytime, Jason. Right. You'll appreciate that A&R holster. I'm big Alex, my good friend who runs A&R, makes a great rig. I literally carry an A&R rig every day, and you're going to dig that holster. Good luck out there. Be safe.
Absolutely. Can't wait. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. And then John from Montana. I'm unmuting your line. You on, John? Okay.
Hey, you talking?
Line's unmuted. Hey, John.
There we go.
Hey, you say John from Montana. I'm actually from Missouri, so I'm not sure what the
That's close.
State
okay, well, so you're the only John on the call, so I'm sure it's you. So I appreciate being on the call, and we just want to let you know we're giving you a full year of the E3 Firearms Premium membership. So just for coming on, we just appreciate you being here, and we're going to email you. We'll connect you up in January. We'll talk to you this month, but in January, look for it. You're going to get a full year of our membership. So appreciate you being on, John.
Well,
thanks, John.
Very nice of you guys. And if you don't mind, I do kind of have a question.
Yeah, what you got?
It's just a kind of a tool question. I was curious as to what you guys carry as your daily concealed carry, if you're carrying. And not necessarily the actual one, but what size do you prefer?
Yeah, I'll go first. John from Missouri, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I got it. I fluctuate a little bit, but recently my EDC, my everyday carry, has been a medium-sized gun. It's been a Glock 19 with a Surefire XC1 Lite carried in an A&R designed appendix holster, and that's been my go-to lately. It's that size gun, like the Glock 19 size. That's a, you know, reasonable size gun, especially, you know, I'm up here in New Hampshire and it's getting cold where I've got a couple more layers on so I can, you know, carry a little bit bigger of a gun. But, you know, if you ask me right now what my flavor is for EDC, that's typically what you find, at least for the primary gun. Brian, what are you packing down there in sunny Florida?
Yeah, my everyday two that I go to, well, and of course you just said the key word, I'm in sunny Florida. So guys, some days I'm in shorts, some days I'm not. So, you know, if I can and I'm wearing a shirt or a Tommy Bahama shirt or sweater or something like that, you know, I've been wearing the SIG P320 RX with the red dot on it. And I am starting to migrate over and try out the Glock 19. And then my other gun for if I'm wearing shorts or something like that is for quite a while has been the SIG P938. And I'm also been
great gun.
Trying the Glock 43. So right now it's been the SIG and Glock has kind of been my go-tos right now.
Okay. Yeah.
To answer your question about do we carry every day, the answer is absolutely.
yeah, I've been trying to carry with a Glock, a full-size Glock, and most of the time I can get away with it, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to try to go with a Glock 19.
Yeah, the you like a full size Glock, like a Glock 17 or you know,
yeah, 17.
Like that,
yeah,
like, yeah, it's a great gun. I mean, one of my favorite guns of all time. You know, for you know all around general purpose gun, but you know it is a big gun in a creative holster. You know, maybe appendix or inside the waistband. And, you know, if you got the right holster, you can certainly do it. It's doable, but it's the butt of the gun, that longer handle is what I find the most
right.
challenging, at least for my body style. So maybe dropping down to something like the 19, maybe, you know, make it a little bit more convenient for you.
Okay, I'll try that.
All right, be safe out there, and congrats.
Hey, well, thanks again. That was a very generous offer.
Great, thanks. And Colleen, we're going to go ahead to you so you can close up the call. Except you must be on mute.
Yes, I've got
there
a cough, so I've been muting when I'm talking there. So yes, appreciate everyone's time today. We are recording today's call so that we can share some of this great information in the future. And with that, I'm going to end the recording and close the event tonight. Thank you all for your time.